All right, well, we're recording.
Wait, one, two, three.
What was the clap for? You just felt like clapping?
That's actually how you make sure that it's synced up.
Oh, okay, wait, do I get to clap too?
Sure.
Wait, clap. All right, we're good.
Is it on play?
Yep.
Welcome to episode 12.
12?
12.
12 geese laying.
A dozen eggs?
No, wait. It's like the 12th day of Christmas.
It's 12 drummers drumming.
Oh, shit. Listen.
I know that because that's our theme for our door.
Oh, what door?
At work.
Oh, you guys are decorating your doors again.
Yeah, for Christmas.
Did you guys start decorating already?
No, because we're procrastinators in our office.
Well, also, like, Thanksgiving is, like, this week, so there's that.
The room across the way already has a Christmas tree up.
Yeah, I saw that when I came to your job last week, and I wasn't going to say anything, but, like, can we finish one holiday?
No. Thanksgiving has been eaten up. Gobble, gobble.
Can I petition to move Thanksgiving to, like, March?
I mean, you can petition. I don't know how well that would work.
Like, let Thanksgiving have its time.
Like I said, don't know how well that would work.
I mean, you're probably right, but here we are. Well, we finally picked a name. So we, like, recorded that, and we'll have a video up on Instagram. And we suck. Sorry it took us so long.
We do suck. But if you did enter in the giveaway, continue listening to the end, because that's when you will hear who the winner is.
Oh, we're saying it at the end?
I mean, yeah, we could do that, or we could just, I don't know, what way do you want to do this?
I mean, I assumed we were doing just Insta, but I mean, we can say it at the end, too.
Does everybody who listens to this follow on Instagram, though?
Well, everyone who entered had to follow.
You're right.
You forgot.
I did forget.
That's okay.
I'm tired.
That's okay. Well, I have a short one today, so starting over. You guys don't know that I'm starting over, but the other story I had was too gruesome.
Made it 25 minutes.
Okay, it was so...
Give me cranberry juice. I am parched now.
You weren't even the one talking.
I'm still parched. All of the liquid in me is gone.
But yeah, we might do that story a different time, maybe. Maybe. I don't know. I'll save it.
I should keep it and drink it all. Go through 25 minutes of sadness.
It was so sad.
25 minutes of sadness and frustration.
Yeah, I mean, this one's also gonna be frustrating, so I'm gonna apologize now.
Motherfucker.
It's frustrating because we don't know who did it.
Oh. True crime, unsolved. Woo, it's the ID channel.
So, yeah. Sorry.
We're back to being a fun channel now.
Yeah, I think it was a little too dark even for me.
All right. New story.
New story.
Take two.
Take two. Clap. Okay, anyway. So, this is the story of the Setagaya murders. It's the Setagaya murders because it took place in the Setagaya district of Japan. And it's the Miyazawa family that was murdered. So this is them. Well,
why is your theme Japan right now?
I don't know. I don't know. These are just the stories that popped in my head.
Okay.
Yeah. It's just the country we ended up in. I don't know. We don't have any Japan listeners, so maybe I want some.
Okay.
Anyway. So the Miyazawa family lived in a suburb of Tokyo called Setagaya. And if I'm butchering that, anyone who speaks Japanese probably a million times better than me. What are you staring at?
The lights behind you. You're fine. Continue. I'm still here listening.
It was so creepy because I was like, is something on me? Like, no. Is there a bug, a spider?
No, just looking at the lights behind you.
Okay. Anyway. So they were a typical middle-class family. However, after a quiet New Year's Eve holiday, their bodies were discovered by neighboring relatives. Dun dun dun.
Unfortunately, it's not gonna be the. It's not the first, and it's definitely not the last.
Dun dun dun.
We're gonna have a story like this.
Yeah. Anyway, on December 30th, the year 2000, the Miyazawa family had enjoyed a quiet evening at home. It was the time of the new year, which is a big deal everywhere, but it is a huge deal for the new year in Japan. And then we don't remember it, but everybody had that huge Y2K scare that like Y2K wasn't going to happen. So, or like we were all going to die. I don't know. Kind of like that Mayan scare that we had in
high school. Do you actually believe that would happen? I kind of just went about my life. I was like, okay, yeah, sure. Sure.
Yeah, I like believed it and I didn't at the same time.
I was just in like that boat of go with the flow. If it happens, it happens. If it doesn't, cool. I'm here for more shit.
Yeah, pretty much. So they were sitting at home. The father, Mikio Miyazawa, who was aged 44 at the time, he briefly surfed the internet. And then his wife, Yasuko Miyazawa, who was 41 at the time, was just watching TV. They had an 8-year-old daughter, Nina, and a 6-year-old son, Ray. Ray was by himself upstairs and Nina was downstairs with Yasuko watching TV. The family's home, like I said, was located in the Setagaya section of Tokyo. And while Tokyo is one of the largest cities in the world, Setagaya is actually known to be pretty reclusive and quiet. And the Miyazawa family actually only had 2 neighbors. So the next day, on December 31st, Yasuko's mom actually called to check in on, like, just you know, mom being mom. And when no one answered after she called, like, multiple times on the home's intercom system, she actually just, like, popped on over, used her key, and let herself in. And, like, if that's not the truest mom shit, like, oh, you're not answering my calls? You're not answering my calls? All right, fuck you. I'm coming over. You're not gonna answer the intercom? Fuck you. I'm gonna use my key. Hope you're decent. Like, tough tits, you know? So, why are you looking at me like that?
That's exactly what I imagine your mom would be like when she's 80 years old.
That is my mom right now. That's my mom right now at 53.
It's just that mom thing of, you can call me and I won't answer, but you best pick up when I call.
No lies detected. If I ever call my mom and she doesn't answer, and then I like call her back like an hour later, she was like, you just called me. But if she calls me and I do not answer, oh, all hell will break loose right then and there.
You remember that time my mom called you while you were at work?
Yeah, because you didn't answer the phone.
I called her one time, and then I took a shower and she called, and then I didn't pick up. So she called 2 more times and then she called Sierra.
While I was at work. And then I'm just like, is everything okay? Like, she scared the shit out of me. I thought like something was wrong maybe.
I was just in the shower.
That's unacceptable. How dare you?
I literally called her back. I was like, hi mom, I'm sorry I was in the shower. She's like, I thought something happened. And I was like, no, I was in the shower.
Yeah, your mom might be a little bit. See, you talk about my mom, but your mom would be the one called. And imagine if I hadn't answered, she probably would have called the cops.
Probably not.
Okay, so the mom shows up, and then that's when she literally, like, she keys her, she lets herself in, and then she walks in and sees Mikio's corpse. He had actually been stabbed to death, and the other members of the family were also found dead. And at this point, grandma's like done. Grandma, mom, she's done.
I'll be done too.
So at 10:38 p.m. on the night of the murders, Mikio Miyazawa had opened up a work email while using the family's computer. Since the email was password protected, police investigators have actually deducted that Mikio was definitely the one who opened it. So at this point, we've now kind of broken down that the murder has happened at some point after 10:38 p.m. and before, I had a timestamp in here, but before, so between 10:38 on the 30th and the morning of the 31st. So it definitely happened on the night of the 30th. So, and at So at that point, that's the last known timestamp that Mikio Miyazawa was still alive. And then around that same time, an eyewitness was walking by the park that ran directly behind the Miyazawa's house. And he actually heard sounds of what he said was a family argument. Like, obviously no one's gonna know, but like, if you hear people kind of screaming, like, I can't say if I hear people arguing at each other that I'm gonna be like, ooh, who's that? What's going on? Like, let me be nosy. Like,
Most people won't.
Most people will not. Would not.
That's, I specifically remember learning about, like, the murder of a woman. And I think it was in, like, New York or something. And she got murdered in between two apartment buildings. So people could hear her screaming clear as day. And they were just like, nope. Staying in my house.
Damn, that's fucked up.
Yeah, it's like a real thing. Like, you think, it's like a condition where you think somebody else will help. But then nobody does. Because everybody thinks that.
Damn.
Mm-hmm.
Damn, I can't get over that. Like, right between two apartment buildings?
Yeah. And, like, some, there was, like, I know that for a fact, like, one of the residents of the place was interviewed afterwards, and they were just like, I heard her screaming. I just didn't go out.
Damn.
So, like, maybe she could have been saved, but she wasn't.
Damn. Mm-hmm. That's fucked up. So it's actually believed that the murders actually occurred somewhere around 11:30. Don't know how that's the timestamp that they got, but forensics people are fucking amazing. Like,
yeah, they can tell how long you've been dead.
The things that forensics agents are able to do, it blows my fucking mind. So it's actually believed. Okay. It's believed that the Miyazawa's killer actually entered through an open window on the second floor bathroom. So first of all, they were working for it. They were like,
they had a grudge.
I don't know. See, that's the thing. And so, like, I'm going to jump ahead of myself. So part of it is that Mikio Miyazawa, so the father was actually, he actually worked for a large marketing, company, for over 20 different, and that had offices in over 20 different countries. And he had worked on marketing campaigns for companies like Microsoft, Nissan, Xerox. And literally the year before, in 1999, Interbrand was the company that was responsible for branding the term Wi-Fi. So, like, that's the kind of work that he did. And that's like the level of company he worked for. So it's kind of crazy to think about. So people were like, well, maybe did it have something to do with his work? But if that's the case, why the whole family? Why not? Like there's so many unanswered questions because of it. So like I said, the killer entered through the second floor of the bathroom in the rear of the house. And it was adjacent to Soshigaya Park. He gained access by climbing up a tree, then removing the window screen. And then the killer actually used his bare hands to strangle Ray, the son, who I said was upstairs by himself. He was sleeping in his room on the second floor. And then, so he killed him through asphyxiation. I know, I'm sorry.
He was only like 8.
He was 3.
He was 3.
He was 3. Wait, let me double check myself.
1 was 8, 1 was 3.
I'm pretty sure it was the little girl who was 8 in the...
Maybe. I don't know.
Oh, no. Ray was 6. The daughter was 8.
Oh.
Nina was 8. Ray was 6.
He was only 6.
Yeah, he was a little boy.
You a cold-hearted person.
Yeah. So Ray died by asphyxiation. So Mikio actually heard something going on in Ray's room and, like any parent, like rushed up the steps. It's actually believed that he injured the killer before he was stabbed in the head with the sashimi bocho knife. And I know you're going to be like, what's a sashimi bocho knife?
No, I know what it is, but why?
Yeah. For people who don't know, but it's literally just a sashimi knife. And it's a long, thin knife that's used to prepare sashimi.
It's specifically designed to be like flexible.
Yeah.
So and, it's bendy.
Yeah, and they and stabbed sharp. Him in the head. Yeah. So the police report claimed that part of the sashimi's knife's blade had actually broken off in Makio's head.
Yeah, it's a bendy knife.
And that's like how they knew what kind of knife would have been used.
Yeah, like I'm sitting here, I'm like, why didn't you just bring like a cleaver?
Who has cleavers? Do you just have a cleaver?
Have you seen like if you have access to a sashimi knife, why wouldn't you have like a cleaver? Like they have specifically very large knives.
I mean, I guess you're right, but like, I don't know.
You could use any other knife and you picked a bendy knife.
Well, so, I mean, you're right, but still. So then the killer, after killing Mikio, he then attacked Yasuko and Nina with the broken knife. And then eventually, I guess he got mad with the broken knife and he actually went into their own kitchen, took one of their Sentuko knives, and then murdered them with one of their own knives.
How dare you disrespect the Santoku knife?
Oh, that's how you say it, Santoku?
I'm pretty sure it's Santoku.
Oh, shit.
Oh, shit. Santoku. I don't know.
I'm bad at this.
I'm pretty sure they're pronounced differently, though.
You're probably right. But then the crazier part, this is the fun part. You ready? So the killer actually remained in the house for somewhere between 2 and 10 hours.
What the fuck?
He used the family's computer. He drank some of their barley tea, ate a melon, and ate some ice cream from the refrigerator. He used the toilet. He treated his injuries with their first aid kits and other sanitary products.
And they didn't get, like, any prints off of this?
Well, this was in 2000.
You can still
DNA is still pretty new.
I know, but you could still have gotten prints, at least.
You're probably right. But that was 19 years ago, and he's never been caught. So
ooh, fucked up.
Here we are. He actually also took a nap.
So, like, they figured all this out and couldn't get fingerprints? I'm so upset!
So, he took a nap on their sofa. And then he took a nap on the sofa on the second floor. And then the police were actually able to analyze that the Mikio's computer had been connected to the internet the morning after the murders around 1:18 a.m. And then again around 10 a.m. around the time Yasuko's mother, Asahi, entered the house and discovered the murders. We don't know if he was just there the entire time and then like dipped when mom came home, which like you've already murdered 4 people. Why would you run when mom comes home? Or if he literally had, if mom just had like the best luck ever and came like right after he.
I'm just imagining this guy walking around with a wibbly knife like whoa, 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 whoa.
Oh my god.
That's what I imagine the night to be like. Whoa, 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 whoa.
So it's believed that he stayed until at least 1:18 a.m. However, the computer usage at 10 a.m. could have also been accidentally triggered when the mom discovered the crime scene. But it's,
you kind of have to like click and go into it,
right? But if you know how, like, if it's asleep and you bump the mouse, but also think this is the 2000s, so like we working on dial up. So that's why my personal theory is that he was there until right before mom left.
That makes sense. Like,
or mom got there, not left.
I don't know. Like, were they able to see if the computer was left on the entire time? Or was it just, like, internet access?
It was connected to the internet at 1:18 and then again at 10 a.m.
So that's not just bumping a mouse.
No.
Like, you wouldn't just leave a,
and right,
a
and
window
like,
open. Like, you had to physically go in.
Right. And mom's not going to walk in and, like, see dead bodies and pull up the internet.
Yeah, no. Like, I don't.
She walked in, saw dead bodies, called the cops. Like
probably also your computer's not going to be, like, in the entryway.
Yes.
And apparently, like, she walked in and just saw the body there. It's like, that shit is in the back. It's in your living room all the way back there.
Yes. So, Police have been able to deduce several very specific clues from the perpetrator about his identity. But unfortunately, they've been unable to even come up with a suspect. So it was determined that the day before the murder, so negating what he had eaten while he was there. So the day before the murder, he had eaten string beans and sesame seeds because they were able to analyze the feces that he left in their bathroom. They determined that the clothes and the sashimi knife were actually left behind by the killer had been purchased. Yeah, he just left tons of clues. Tons of clues. So many clues. That's why I said this is going to be frustrating.
Because somebody in the force fucked up.
I mean, that's the reason that OJ wasn't.
It's so annoying. Like, you were able to analyze the feces, but you couldn't get fingerprints?
Or DNA from his shit. I mean,
your shit's usually not a good indicator of DNA, though.
Really?
No. It's usually you want, like, saliva or straight blood. Or a hair strand.
Damn. So they determined that his clothes had actually been purchased at Kanagawa Prefecture. Police also learned that only 130 units of the killer's sweater were made and sold. So it's limited down to 130 people.
So it's like that shit with that one killer who had the only pair of shoes sold in the area and then media leaked it.
Chuck. Yes, Richard Ramirez. But they were only able to track down 12 of the people who bought the sweater.
That's like another 118 or
118 people unaccounted for.
Were they all paying in cash?
I don't know. So you mentioned fingerprints, yes?
Yes.
So the Tokyo police did find the killer's DNA and his fingerprints in the Miyazawa's house, but they didn't match anyone in any of the Tokyo police databases.
That sounds like a lie.
It didn't. It's true.
That sounds like someone fudged, like, information.
Well, no, because what it really could mean is that they just don't have a criminal record or they've never had a federal job. You're really upset by this.
I'm so upset.
Sorry. The killer's blood was actually gained during an analysis. I wanted to say analyst. I don't know why. An analysis of the murder scene that revealed that he actually has traces of type A blood, which would not
very helpful.
Well, it rules out it was like definitely not Miyazawa family. So I don't know. A DNA analysis of the type A blood determined that the killer is a male, possibly mixed race, with maternal DNA indicating a mother of European descent, possibly from a southern European country near the Mediterranean or the Adriatic Sea, a paternal DNA indicating that the father is of East Asian descent, and it is considered possible that the European maternal DNA comes from a distant ancestor from the mother's line. Rather than a fully European mother. Analysis of his Y chromosome showed the haplogroup and a common haplogroup, which is distributed amongst Asian people, appearing in 1 in 4 Koreans, 1 in 10 Chinese, and 1 in 13 Japanese. These results led the Tokyo Metropolitan Police to seek assistance through the International Criminal Police Organization. And because at this point, they're now assuming that the killer might not have been Japanese, or even present in Japan, like he could have, and then did. So at this point, they've involved cops in China, cops in Korea, and like they still haven't found him. The home itself was actually a shared building that was split into two levels, so like like a duplex. Here I can even show you what the home looked like. That's their house.
See, Drew, this is why living in the middle of nowhere is not the best idea.
Yeah, actually, though.
Because it looks kind of like your house.
So, while it looked like one house, it was actually more It was much closer to a duplex than anything. So they actually...
Duplex.
Thank you. The Miyazawa family actually lived right next door to Tsuko's family, her mother mostly, but also her sister and brother-in-law who lived with her during the period of time. So, fun for me because I get to chop this up and rearrange it later.
Your problem now. He's so weird. You've never even met him, but he's so weird.
Okay, anyway. So before leaving, the suspect actually gathered an odd variety of the family's belongings and their garbage, put them in, and then put them all in the bathtub. It was mostly garbage, such as like ice cream wrappers and like the ad pamphlets that come in the mail. And then also it contains some of Makio's work receipts and Yasuko's school documents, along with some feminine sanitary items.
Feminary.
Yeah, that contain the killer's blood. So the thought is that maybe he used a pad to like soak up his blood.
Okay.
Because remember I said the dad fought back.
Yeah.
So, after, like I said, he slept there for what's believed to be anywhere from 2 to 10 hours. Who knows? Maybe he got woken up. My other theory was that whenever mom, because like I said, mom paged the intercom. So, maybe when mom paged the intercom, that's what woke him up. And then he got back on the internet really quick, deleted his history, and then dipped.
Maybe.
It's just a thought. So, originally people thought like maybe it was a robbery, but they were like, he didn't take anything, so that's bullshit. But then over the years, they've just kind of been trying to do anything to solve it. So at this point, it's been 19, almost 20 years since the murder.
Cold cases.
Cold cases are tough, man. Like, Golden State was fucking luck. It was luck that his, like, great-nephew did a 23andMe kit. Like, luck. Over the years that have passed since the crime has been committed, pieces of supposed evidence have been kind of put together, and people, there's like a subreddit to try to solve this. There's a whole webpage dedicated to like, if you have any clues or anything that can help solve the case, all of that is there. And most of the leads have ended up kind of coming up to nothing, obviously. Supposedly there were these postcards that were reported missing after the family's home. And then later on reports said that they were greeting cards. And then they were saying that those got stolen by the killer, but there was no way to prove if they were ever really there. So it's like, yeah. And it's been brought up a lot of times on like a lot, like I was in the subreddit group and people still talk about these postcards and it's like, why, what is so special about these postcards? So that's why some people think that maybe it was someone who knew them. Like you said, a grudge. Because it's like maybe they were someone pictured in the family postcard that got sent. You know, you send out your Christmas card, it's got your picture on it, and then you're like, fuck, I'm in this Christmas card and I just murdered the fuck out of them. I better take this real quick.
They'll definitely know it was me.
My bad. They'll definitely piece that together. Never mind my feces or blood pieced all over the house. It's fine. So the second piece of evidence... pause. So it later on ended up being that the missing postcards had actually been taken by the investigator who was following up with the family members and friends who sent the cards. But people are still like... really adamant, like the subreddit, like I swear there's like 4 different little chunks that are just, but the postcards, it's like OJ in the glove don't fit, then you can't acquit. It's like, or then you,
this
must,
is not Cinderella.
I'm just saying, people swear by these postcards, but it ended up getting discredited. And as far as the police are concerned, they're not really following. The second piece of evidence that was later on discredited was that there were trace amounts of red dye found at the scene, And people thought that the killer was involved with like meth or some other hard drug, which like,
how is that related to dye?
I don't know. Like, I don't do drugs.
Specifically red dye?
I don't know. I don't do drugs.
I've never heard of that in my life.
Apparently, it's used in the manufacture of methamphetamine. Red dye is.
Okay.
I don't know. I don't do drugs. But the red dye ended up turning out to be nothing. But yeah, people think that those are like two of the things, and it's like, maybe if he did meth, that would explain this, because maybe that would explain the nap, and that would explain the...
It was just like, man, I'm too high, I gotta go sleep.
I mean, you know, like, it's like when you know you have too much to drink, and you're like, I need a nap.
I'm gonna just lay down here, this floor look real comfy.
But over the years, pretty much no new answers have come up. And then the killer's kind of become like an urban legend. So in 2006, a forensic testing process had actually progressed. So at this point, you know, we're to the point of being able to test DNA. And like I said, we were able to figure out that he was of, you know, the East European and the East Asian descent. And so at this point, you know, we've got better forensic testing. So they're thinking maybe we'll be able to figure it out. And nothing more came of it. They were able to limit down, like I said before, that he was male. And that's pretty much it that came from that. They, to this day, it's still one of the most researched cases ever in Japan. It's like I said, it's still unsolved to this day. There have been multiple theories that have been circulated. There's multiple message boards. There is a theory that there were three killers. There's a theory that it was the Yakuza. There's a theory that there are so many. There's a theory that there was a theory. Okay. Like, there are so many thoughts and theories out there. And it's one of those things that I wish we could just solve it. But, you know, one day, maybe somebody 2-3 generations down from the guy who did kill them will do a 23andMe test, just like Golden State. If only we'll be so lucky. I think it'll happen once. I think that was just a rare enough occurrence that it'll happen once.
He just wanted to know what his family history was.
Yeah. Surprise! Your great uncle, twice removed, is the Golden State Killer. So the main theories, I'm just gonna go through the main four, because like I said, there is a theory for a theory. Like, there's a theory for why the sky's blue in this thing. But anyway, so theory number one is that that prior to the murders, Mikio Mizawa had engaged in several heated arguments with young skateboarders who had frequented the skate park that was behind the family's house. In particular, an eyewitness said that Mikio often confronted the teenage skateboarders for making too much noise. One eyewitness also said that Mikio had done the same thing to members of a local motorcycle gang who were hanging out at the skate park. And then some detectives suspected that one of the skateboarders might have gotten so pissed that they went and took revenge on the family and then, like, just decided to kill the fuck out of all of them. Because the description of the suspect supposedly fits the stereotypical image of a skateboarder. However,
yeah. Who got a look at the suspect?
Yeah, I don't know.
Also, if that's your reasoning, you are petty as fuck.
Yeah.
Not a good reason.
Yeah, so, oh, the supposed, that was the one. Remember I said somebody was like, oh, well, I heard people arguing, and, like, I just saw a strange man, and, like, that's what people are going on.
Okay.
So they're going off the description of the random strange man who could or couldn't, may or may not have been linked to it. The man who was wearing a Uniqlo jacket, because they knew it was Uniqlo, black gloves, a long sleeve t-shirt, white shoes.
How do you know it was long sleeve if he's wearing a jacket?
I don't see. That's why I told you I take some of these theories with a grain of salt. That's what the eyewitness said. He's wearing a jacket and a long sleeve shirt.
You are a terrible eyewitness.
That's what the eyewitness said. And then a fanny pack.
Okay.
Yeah, fanny pack. Yeah. Anyway. So, however, despite this, some have a hard time believing that a few arguments could turn into the murder, obviously.
Yeah. Petty.
Petty, 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 petty. So, the second theory is that it's an American serviceman who killed them. So right now, there are somewhere between 50,000 and 60,000 U.S. military personnel stationed in Japan. The American military presence in Japan has been pretty constant since World War II because, you know, we fucked up and, yeah, we're not going to talk about my opinions on the nuclear bomb. So during the time since we've had American military presence in Japan, there have been U.S. soldiers, Marines, and sailors and airmen have had multiple times where they've committed rapes and murders. So, given the ugly history between the two groups, it's suspected, and because of the suspected mixed race heritage, it's believed that it's possible that it was an American serviceman. It wouldn't have been hard for an American serviceman to reach the house from, you know, climbing the tree. They have army experience. We've all seen boot camp movies. Nothing's really come from that theory, but that's one of the main theories that has circulated around.
I just want to know if, like, he had ever actually had contact with an American serviceman in that case.
Probably not.
Because, like, that would still make it a very random act.
Yeah.
But this doesn't, you know.
Because it's not like his wife was sexually assaulted or anything like that. Not that that would make motive, but if, you know, maybe then you could say, oh, he raped the wife and then killed. But, like, the son was killed first, then the husband, then mom and daughter. So, the third theory is that it was a killer drifter. So in 2018, the Japanese authorities released information about a prime suspect for the murder. So pretty recently. So it's believed that... So in 2018, they actually said that they found the supposed killer's fanny pack. And it had it had trace amounts of sand, which, like, Japan's an island, so, like,
there's a lot of beaches.
The whole fucking thing is sand, but I'm not even gonna,
it's not all sand, but there's a lot of
beach. A lot of fucking sand. It's kind of like saying, like, oh, we had a murder in Hawaii and he had trace amounts of sand. Really? Tell me something else that would surprise me. Like,
he was a surfer.
Really? Shocker. Anyway, so in the fanny pack, they found trace amounts of sand, like I said, which indicated he spent a lot of time outside. Okay.
I don't know about you, but sand, if you go to the water, sand just gets everywhere. Like, it don't care. You can try and actively not to get it.
Literally. Like, the people who fuck on the beach. How? That's sand in places you don't want sand. I don't even like sand in my toes.
I love my toes in the sand.
No, but, like, after the fact, like, when your foot's in your shoe and you are no longer at the beach.
That's why you wear sandals.
Yeah, I'm just saying. So the fanny pack also had a fluorescent pen. And the police actually concluded that the murderer is somewhere between 15 and 20 years old because of this fanny pack. Because adults don't carry fanny packs.
I don't know about you, but back then, adults were the ones carrying the fanny pack.
Yeah, no. Well, I mean, in 2000, we were 5 years old. So, like, 20 years old seemed like adults to us.
My dad carried a fanny pack when I was five.
All right, fair. I rest my case. So while in
also the fact that they call fanny packs belt bags now.
It's a fucking fanny pack. I hate that. So while Japan is often, you know, seen as, like, they have pretty restrictive immigration laws, the country did have a problem with illegal immigration at one point, most of it coming from Northeast and South Asia in the 1980s. So it's possible that the killer was an illegal immigrant or a drifter who utilized Japan's train service in order to commit crimes, then escaped somewhere else and possibly to another country, which would explain the East Asian descent. And then there's also another possibility that the killer was an unemployed young man, because during the 1990s, this is all in the Drifter theory, because during the 1990s, Japan had the whole lost decade thing that happened, and they had like a little baby depression. Not that there's such a thing as baby depression, but it was like a short, it was a short depression. And they saw a rise in youth unemployment, which would mean 15 to 20 years old. He fits. So they're thinking.
But he didn't take any money.
Yes.
This is why this seems sketch.
It's a theory.
It's a bad theory.
It's the more popular theory, which is why I'm only covering the top four. No money. I'm only covering my top four.
I'm just saying, if you're unemployed and that is your motive, you would have taken valuables or money or something.
Yeah.
You wouldn't have just put trash in the bathtub and then dipped.
I mean, you're right. So they're thinking that maybe, hear me out. Hear me out. So they're thinking that because the dad was a successful businessman, that maybe like the kid lost his job because of the dad, and like it was some plot for revenge because he got let go because of company cutbacks, and so he just murdered the fuck out of all of them.
That's still a very specific person to choose. Like, most people would just, they'd just be like, they'll focus on like the most available person, I feel like.
Yes.
He still would have also taken valuables or money.
Yeah. So the final theory is that it was a South Korean soldier. So
I have heard there's bad blood between them.
Between South Korea and Japan?
Well, Koreans and Japanese, yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting. So there's a lot of circumstantial evidence on this one, but a lot of people who share the killer's paternal DNA are ethnically Korean. And then the forensic testing of the clothes left behind by the killer at the crime scene indicated that they had been washed in mineral-rich hard water, which is a type of cleaning water that is more common in South Korea, but severely uncommon in Japan. So, okay. In 2015, a Japanese true crime author, I'm going to butcher this, I'm so sorry, Fumiya Ichihashi, actually released a book claiming that he had uncovered the killer's identity. He noted that the police detectives had found soil at the crime scene and then traced it back to the province of Gyeonggi in South Korea. And then in his book, he actually calls his main suspect R and says that the killer had once served in the South Korean military. He goes on to say in his book that R's fingerprints, which were supposedly obtained by the author, are a match to the fingerprints left behind by the killer at the crime scene.
Why didn't you turn that on over to the police then?
I don't know. But that's the other theory.
I don't like that book part, but if I were to get behind one of those four theories, like, that's the one that I most likely believe.
Yeah. So there's a million different reasons why people think there was a motive, and it's one of those things that, unfortunately, it's gone 19 years unsolved. There's been a movie, there's been a book, obviously, there's been multiple books. There was a short TV series, like a Lifetime miniseries, but not Lifetime. And then there's just been a lot, and it's one of those crazy things that we can kind of hope it gets solved one day, but so it's one of those things we hope that it'll get solved one day, but unfortunately DNA doesn't match to anyone, fingerprints doesn't match to anyone. He took a shit in a bucket, but we don't know whose shit it is. And despite the fact that he was wearing one of only 130 sweaters made ever, excuse me, we don't know who it was. So that is the unsolved murder of the Satakaya murders. Are you okay over there?
Yeah, I'm fine. I just, this is why I like haunted things, because they usually don't include an unsolved murder. Like, cold cases are very interesting, but they're so frustrating.
Yeah. So, we can only hope. maybe somebody in his family will take a 23andMe kiss.
Probably not.
Hey, never thought we'd catch BTK.
Do you think 23andMe is readily available over there?
I don't know.
I feel like that's mainly like a American, Western European thing.
I mean, I wouldn't be surprised.
Hauntings are better. I don't know anything about them, and they're not, you know, like super frustrating or saddening. Well, you want to guess where I am this week?
Where were you last week?
I don't remember.
Oh my god. Was it Tennessee?
Was it Tennessee? It was somewhere in the south. You want a hint?
Iowa. Illinois.
You want a hint?
Ohio.
Would you like a hint?
No. I don't know. All right, go ahead.
We're planning a trip for this.
Florida?
No, other one.
Louisiana?
Yes.
I thought we did Louisiana already.
No. We're doing Louisiana. And yay, very specifically, New Orleans. I might have done Louisiana. I don't know. I don't think I did. I have a list going. And shouldn't be any repeats. So specifically, we're going to talk about two different places. And I kind of just wanted to lump them together because of their name. They're named after two specific people. The brothers. And they're both located on Bourbon Street.
Bourbon Street.
And really, really rather close to each other. They're essentially on like the same block.
Okay.
So one of these places is called Lafitte's Black Shop, and the other one is Lafitte's Guest House.
Can we go stay in the guest house?
Yeah, the guest house is an actual hotel now.
We have to go stay there.
No.
Oh man.
So, these both have like quite a few like hauntings, quote unquote, associated with them. And you are always welcome to go to the blacksmith shop for a ghost tour, a haunted pub crawl, you know, or just to get drunk if you really want to.
Cool.
Get ghouly and drunk on a Tuesday.
Can we go do this? So can we do this ghost tour while we're there?
I mean, I guess. It's your birthday.
Yes.
But yeah, you can also... They're both accessible places. You can stay there at the guest house. You can visit and get drunk at the black shop. So, let's get on with the history.
Okay.
So, the places were named after two brothers who were believed to have... been related to the places in one way or another. So their names were John and Pierre Lafitte. I think it's Lafitte. I don't speak French, okay? Lafitte.
I have to see it.
Yeah. Oh, well.
Lafitte. Yeah, you're good.
Cool! I can speak French!
I mean, you can understand it when I speak it, so that's
sometimes
funny. Okay,
so starting with the black shop, it's a lot of people believe that they use the black shop, or like the building of the blacksmith, not the black shop, but the blacksmith shop. They believe that the building was used as a base for their smuggling operations because they were privateers. Read pirate. Privateers were just pirates.
We got a pirate. Nittany, do you want to be a pirate? Do you want to be a pirate? Tell the people.
Okay. He'd be a very bad pirate. He'd just sleep all the time.
He would.
And just so you know, like, a privateer is really just a socially acceptable pirate. Like, you get paid to be a pirate.
Fancy pirate.
I'm not even sure they're quite fancy. They're just pirates.
Are they butt pirates?
Don't smile at me with that face.
You know, like in Spurs and Stripes.
Nope, stop it.
Okay.
It's believed that they were born in France, or either in France or from the French colony of Saint-Domingue. I don't know words, man. And then specifically John or Jean? Jean-Pierre?
Jean-Pierre, yeah.
So specifically, Jean was known to have become a local war hero during the War of 1812.
Okay.
When he helped Andrew Jackson defend the city of New Orleans.
Oh, I see you.
And thanks to this, he was also pardoned for all his illegal activity.
Ooh, yay! Illegal activity pardonship. Okay.
And though I say all of this, there really isn't any records to support that he was a privateer in any way,
shape, or form.
So we don't actually know what he was.
I feel lied to.
He was a real person. He was a war hero. But we don't know exactly what he was doing.
I feel lied to.
So the blacksmith shop might possibly be the oldest bar in the U.S., with some people believing it was built as early as 1722.
So that's totally a stop on the bar tour, right?
Yes.
Yes.
It is for sure one of the oldest buildings in the French Quarter and is one of the only remaining examples of a Creole cottage.
Okay.
So the place managed to evade two very large fires that happened on Bourbon Street. Two.
What, did the fires just burn asymmetrically around it?
They believe that it was saved from the fire due to, like, the slate roofing that was used.
Okay, that makes sense.
Because it's not a very tall building.
I'll take logic for 300, Alex.
It's a daily double.
Oh my god.
So, So some of the reasons why they believe, like, this particular place was used by the brothers is because, there were two, like, people. So there was Simon de Roche, also known as Castillon, and the privateer Captain René Belouche, who owned the property. And Captain René actually commanded a ship called the Spy, which apparently belonged to Lafitte's fleet that he commanded.
Okay.
So it's reasonable to think that they were good friends, or like at least like pretty good acquaintances. So the Captain René would let them use the place as a base for negotiations with potential buyers. And that's because Bourbon Street was pretty neutral ground for any like shady dealings that happened.
Ooh.
Because it wasn't like your own personal place. So you couldn't be like tracked there.
Okay. That's fair.
And it was also like there were just so many people coming through Bourbon Street.
Okay.
So the hunts for this place.
The what?
The hunts.
I thought you said the Hans, like as in like Mulan, like
the Huns.
Oh yeah, I said what I said.
The Han Solo.
Oh my god. Okay, so the Hans.
So Jean Lafitte is one of the main ones that obviously they believe haunt the place because he did a lot of shady dealings there.
Right.
So it's said that you can see a full-bodied apparition of him sometimes.
Hell no, burn it down.
It's not, like, very common to see him.
But wait,
like,
I can't even burn the motherfucker down. It's got a slate roof.
Yeah, it survived two fires. And then when you see this apparition, he's decked out in all of his privateer gear. Like, he ready to go.
Okay.
However, lucky for you, if you ever did see him, he never interacts with anyone.
He's never just interacts trying to with live people. His best life.
Yeah, he just kind of lurks in the dark corners of the area. So like he's particularly known for being near the fireplace on the bottom floor.
Okay.
And he will just like, he's a bit of a creeper. He'll just stare until a person notices and then disappears.
Okay.
This is apparently a reoccurring event. There's also an unknown woman who apparently is upstairs. And it's rumored that she was a woman who lived in the building in the 1890s. And then killed herself in one of the rooms.
Well,
we don't really have any sources on this. That's why she's unknown. But it's said that she likes to whisper in the ears of unsuspecting people.
What in the ASMR?
Hey guys, I'm the unknown woman.
Oh my god, get the fuck out.
Um, There's also apparently some phantom red eyes that you can see in the building. So it's never a body. There's no voice. It's just red eyes. And it's seen in like the dark corners, just like Jean Lafitte. And apparently if you make contact with the eyes, they'll just freeze on you and then fade to nothing. So there's a lot of creepers in this building.
I'ma take a hell no.
And so just, you know, just to kind of put that out there, a lot of people don't, so it depends on the person, but some people don't equal or like equate eyes with ghosts.
I do.
That's why I said it depends on the person. Some people will associate them with demonic hauntings.
Oh, shit.
It's also believed that the building is severely haunted by a lot of the victims of the French Quarter fires of 1788 and 1794. Those are the two fires that it survived.
Okay, so here's what you do. You go to your local gardening store. What are they called? They're like, it's like...
Nurseries?
A nursery, yeah. Go to your local nursery, right? Find yourself some sage seeds, right? Some sage seeds. Pick up every single floorboard in the motherfucking house. Put sage seeds all up and through it. 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 Water it and allow seeds to grow. Allow the vines to grow and then rebuild some floorboards over top of those, like a foot or so that the sage can just permeate and saturate and stew.
We're still going there, right?
Yeah. I'm just saying that's what we should do.
I don't think we can just take the floorboards up and plant sage seeds. I don't think they'll allow that. The owners probably won't be too happy.
Sure they would.
So while this place was, you know, is a bar now and it was the site of a lot of dealings, it's believed that it actually may have been a blacksmith at one point. So like the name isn't just for shits and giggles. Like it could have actually been a blacksmith.
Okay.
Which is also pretty interesting because Pierre, the other Lafitte brother, was actually a blacksmith. Interesting. So he might have actually used it as a workspace. At one point, this is a fun fact that I just want to throw up, but at one point the bar was actually, or the building that the bar is in, was actually turned into Cafe Lafitte by Roger Kaplinger. And Cafe Lafitte was a very popular spot in the mid-1940s and attracted a number of clientele, including the gay community. So it was an up-and-coming and popping gay bar.
Oh!
Eventually, the building was sold in 1953 because he apparently didn't have clear title to the property. Sorry, okay. Kaplinger. And then in return, he just opened up Cafe Lafitte in Exile. That was the new name. And it was just down the road. Down the road in spite. And it's still there now. So it's one of the oldest gay bars in the U.S.
Okay, we're going.
Yep. So the other place is Lafitte's Guest House. All right, so Lafitte's Guest House is a three-story French-style building that was built on the property that was once the location of one of the versions of a charity hospital.
Okay.
So back in the 1700s, New Orleans was essentially a giant cesspool of disease.
Yes.
And the first charity hospital was built around the 1730s. But get this, it was built with the intent of treating venereal diseases and only those. So there's all these like things to treat and they settle on STDs.
Okay.
Obviously that building just got destroyed because the original hospital no longer exists thanks to a hurricane that happened in 1779.
I was going to ask you if you were talking about like the charity hospital that got abandoned after Katrina, but I guess you're not.
No.
Okay.
That's why I said one of the versions of the charity hospital.
Okay.
And they all have, like, different names, and I didn't feel like dealing with the names, so. They're gone. The next charity hospital wasn't constructed until 3 years later, so they waited for 3 years, and there was just people sick in the street for 3 years.
Yes.
And that next charity hospital was the one that was built on the same land as the Lafitte Guest House. So it was the Lafitte Guest House was actually part or a smaller part of the land that it was on.
Okay.
That hospital then burnt down in 1809. And then that was when the land was split up and put for sale. So a house was then built on that specific plot of land. And then it has been inhabited by a number of people before it actually found its way into the hands of Pierre Lafitte.
Okay.
So bringing it back to him. So Pierre ended up apparently gifting this residence to a woman by the name of Marie-Louise Villard.
Okay. That's one hell of a name.
Yep. So you have to just keep in mind, like, this was a time where a woman of mixed race was seen as, like, desirable by French Creole men.
Oh, yeah.
But desirable in the I want you as a mistress, not as a wife kind of way.
Oh, that's ignorant.
It is. Usually, like, they rarely ever married these women of mixed race. Usually they only took them as mistresses until the man was married.
That's ignorant.
It's how it was, unfortunately. So while Marie may have been Pierre's companion, Pierre was just like, fuck your rules. I'm not ever getting married.
I mean, okay.
There's no indication he ever got married to anyone. In fact, he actually had 7 children with Marie-Louise. So it's likely that they actually had a real long-lasting relationship just without a title.
Okay, I mean, that's fair.
Yeah, he was like, I am a privateer. Fuck your shit.
I'm a pirate. Arrgh.
Rarr. Nowadays, the guest house that's there has obviously been changed into a hotel, but it also functions as an active gallery, like an art gallery, which is really cool. But when you want to talk about activity, you got to talk about room 21.
Ooh.
Specifically.
Only 21? It doesn't go next door sometimes to 22?
No, just room 21. Although the whole place is apparently haunted. Stop trying to eat your mic.
I'm not.
Uh-huh. Okay. So in room 21, it is said that you can hear the sounds of a crying child. So we're going to start there. And it's said that the little girl was named Marie Glaces? Glaces? I don't know.
Iglesias.
Iglesias. No. And Marie had apparently contracted yellow fever and never actually recovered from it.
Contracted or contracted? Contracted. Because one of them means you drew up a contract.
No, she contracted it. She contracted. Yeah.
She drew up a contract with yellow fever. Got it.
She had yellow fever. She never recovered. She died.
Stop screaming into your mic. I have to fix that later. Stop making more work for me.
What if I just, like, screamed at the top of my lungs?
I'd throw this computer at you right now.
But the room that she apparently died in was room 21.
Okay.
So Marie was only about, she was either 8, 9, or 10 years old, so she was pretty young. And it's also been reported, though, that you can see her image in that mirror that's in room 21.
Oh, shit.
So not only can you hear crying, but you can see her. It's been said by others that Marie sometimes attempts to speak with the children who are there. And there are others who have experienced hearing the sound of what is believed to be Marie's mother sobbing in the same room that Marie died in. So in room 21.
Oh, that's so sad.
Yep. It seems like she never just really recovered from Marie's death and actually passed away in the same room a few years later. So there's two deaths.
Did she just spend all of her life in that room?
I don't know. I really don't know.
Because, like, what are the odds?
Mm-mm.
Okay.
As for Marie's mother, she's known to attempt to communicate with guests, and she also likes to turn the lights on and off and wander around the grounds of the hotel.
Yeah, sometimes it'd be like that.
From the guests who have actually stayed in the room, a lot of them have said that the room just kind of gave them a very, like, heavy feeling of despair and sorrow. It just kind of weighted on them. And then there was a guy named Mark who actually worked at the hotel, and he stated that guests would report hearing crying and coughing, and they've also seen those reflections in the mirror. So this is a guy who worked there.
Damn.
As for like other occurrences that happen in the place sometimes, so while Marie's mother likes to turn on and off the lights, it doesn't happen just in room 21. It happens all throughout the hotel.
Okay.
And then there are also items that are often moved around, with furniture sometimes being completely rearranged. They just went, I don't like how you did this. Let me change it. Don't make that face at me.
That's rude as shit.
I mean, it's a ghost. What you gonna do? It's not like the random lady who just kept rearranging people's porch furniture. That was a real thing in, like, Maryland at one point in my life. Like, there was just a woman going around, and, like, during her morning run, she would just stop and rearrange people's patio furniture.
Bitch, what the fuck?
Every time. And then they would move it back, and she'd do it again.
What the She's lucky she didn't get shot.
Then according to Mark, the most common thing people say that they hear are things being dragged across the floor upstairs in empty rooms. Yes, ma'am.
I don't like that.
There is also one apparition of a young girl who can be seen walking up the stairs, but never coming back down.
Mm-mm.
And a lot of people would claim that the girl had blonde hair and is wearing a white nightgown. So it's possible that it is Marie. But there have also been rumors that there was a young girl who actually slipped and fell down the main stairwell and died. So it might be her. We don't know. She just never came back down.
Oh, shit.
And that is the story of the last.
That's how the fuck you ended it? What, yes, the fuck?
It is. With a child who might have died falling down the stairs.
What the fuck? I didn't like that. I'm upset. I want to go eat fries now.
I think you're okay.
I'm upset.
They didn't hear it, but I had to listen to 25 minutes of sadness before all of this.
You're not wrong.
So I think you're doing okay.
You're not wrong. But yeah. Oh my gosh. That wraps up episode 12. Whoa. That's crazy.
Making waves.
That's kind of crazy. We do want to say a really big thank you because we crossed 1,000 downloads this week.
She like constantly texted me during work, just like, we're at 999.
Yes. Please don't scream into your mic.
We're at 999.
I hate you. But yeah, we do want to thank you guys so much. It really does mean a lot to us. It means that we might suck a little less than we think we do. Yes, no, maybe so.
Spread the love. Just send us to all your friends. Make them listen. Be like, this is now your life.
Yeah, aggressively tell all your friends. Be like, hey, listen. Hey, listen. Anyway, follow us on Twitter and on Instagram. We have the Facebook page. Some of you guys are already in it.
Handles are always Haunted Tourism Podcast.
Yes, always Haunted Tourism Podcast.
If you want to break from the spoops, come check out our travel blog at Postcard Bound. I did it correct this time. I'm proud.
Podcast Bound?
Postcard.
Never letting you live that down.
Fuck you.
That's rude.
But come check us out at, it's technically post_card_bound. And that's our Instagram handle.
Not my fault. Someone took the regular one.
We also have a Twitter. And then of course, also check out the blog. That's where we blog about all our fun adventures. Yes, it might be missing a couple posts from the last couple weeks because I just,
it's okay. Things happen.
It happens. I work a full-time job.
Yes. But yeah, that's it. And that's episode 12.
Well, thank you so much for listening. And we hope you come back next week to listen if you dare.
Stay spooky.
Bye.
Bye.